just recollect.
Oh, I'm using it. Is that okay? Thank you.
I thought just in the middle.
Okay, thanks very much, James, and hello, everybody, and thank you for coming to our session. As James says, I'm Phil Levy. I'm from the University of Sheffield, and I'll tell you a little bit about the background of our project in a moment. This is my colleague, Ian Loseby, also from the University of Sheffield. Ian's the technical support officer on our LAMS project, based in the Department of Law, in fact. My subject background is information studies at the university, but I'm currently on an internal secondment to direct a Centre for Excellence in Teaching and Learning, which, for those of you, some of you, I think, will know what that means. It's a CETL. It's a HEFCE-funded educational innovation and development programme based within our institution, which runs over 5 years and has quite a lot of resource to put into rewarding educational practice and further developing and innovating it. And that's the context within which we've been exploring LAMS, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that today. But I did want to start off with a few caveats, actually, today. One of these is that this is very much, what we're going to be talking about is very much work in progress. We've been using LAMS now for a couple of semesters, so this past academic year. And we've been using LAMS 1 for various reasons that I won't go into throughout. So, you know, that's a bit of a caveat as well. So some of the kind of feedback and the issues that have been arising relate specifically to LAMS version 1. Others, I think, are more generic and perhaps more fundamental and interesting from that point of view. We're very excited about LAMS 2 and the opportunity to kind of further develop work with that, but we haven't really yet got into that. We haven't fully analysed our data yet, and we haven't kind of put it into the context yet of other people's work very well. So I guess what I'm saying is we're still exploring, and I want to use this a bit as an opportunity to run a few ideas or themes past you that have emerged from our work and to have a little bit of discussion about that. So I'll try and be reasonably brief with what I talk about. It's always a bit of a challenge. So there we go. So our project is called DESLA, Designing and Sharing Inquiry-Based Learning Activities. It's one of the LAMS implementation projects. One of the learning design implementation projects within the Design for Learning programme. And there are a number of themes that are emerging from our work that I want to just touch on today. Issues of pedagogy, design, facilitation, usability, a little bit about sharing and reuse, although we haven't really fully explored our data on that yet, and some issues on support. And hopefully there'll be a bit of time for questions. What we've been doing is looking at specifically at LAMS in the context of the question of how might it help us to develop best practice, good practice, in inquiry-based learning and to share and disseminate that practice within, very much within, initially, an institutional framework of an institutional community of interest in that particular pedagogy. So we've been carrying out a number of implementations with colleagues, looking at effectiveness and impact in relation to those points up there on the slide, acceptability to practitioners, learner outcomes, organisational questions. What I will mention right from the start is that we're an organisation that's very, very wedded to our VLE, to WebCT, and that doesn't have a strong traditional background in support for open source software development and use. So this project is countercultural in that context, which has been an interesting context for us to be in. Okay, so it also gives us an opportunity to look at LAMS, of course, and the connection between the practical connection between LAMS and our interest in inquiry-based learning, IBL, but also broader, more conceptual issues to do with design for learning and our specific interest in that pedagogy. And we have a number of deliverables which we're working towards. Essentially, what we've been doing is quite straightforward. We've been trying to engage colleagues who are already engaged in loosely a kind of community of practice around inquiry-based learning, in using LAMS and experimenting with LAMS. So we've been running introductory workshops, we've been talking to colleagues one-to-one and so on, trying to get them engaged with LAMS. And then when colleagues have said yes, they want to try it out, we've gone in and had a discussion with them about, well, how do you normally go about designing for learning? And what kind of do you have in your mind, you know, when you do? So we've been trying to explore a little bit with them the kind of underlying conceptions that they bring to the task of designing with LAMS. We've had an opportunity to do some observations of LAMS in use, and then when it's been used, we've gone back to colleagues and said, okay, so you've now used it, how do you think it worked? And sort of unpack some of those issues. And we've also been gathering student feedback. So that's what we've been doing. We were interested in LAMS, very interested in LAMS, and as I say, still are in terms of taking it into the future. I think in particular because we have this interest in inquiry-based learning. We see inquiry-based learning as a very process-focused kind of pedagogy, very much focused on activity, learner activity, self-directed learner activity, but a type of active learning. Not, you know, I think they're not inquiry-based learning and active learning are not, in our view, synonymous. But we would see inquiry-based learning as a form of active learning. And it seemed to us that actually what we looked around at in the institution was the VLE mostly being used as a content repository, and what we wanted to do was to see whether we might use LAMS to assist colleagues in thinking differently about designing for inquiry-based learning. I want to talk just for a few minutes about inquiry, because I think that's really important, you know, for our context. So what is inquiry-based learning? What do we mean by it? Well, you know, the OED says inquiry is all about seeking. It's all about a process of discovery. So the action of seeking, especially now always for truth, knowledge, or information concerning something, search, research, investigation, examination. So very broadly speaking, the pedagogy of inquiry, as we understand it, really quite a broad umbrella term for a variety of different kinds of pedagogical approaches which are based on the idea of students learning through investigation, exploration, research. Very often in quite open-ended kinds of contexts. Exploring problems, exploring case scenarios, and so on. And has a question as the point of departure. Very often colleagues tend to think in terms of more structured forms of, or more tightly structured forms of scaffolding for inquiry-based learning at lower levels, so first year undergraduate, moving towards looser frameworks at higher levels of learning. So, you know, that tends to be the way in which colleagues think about that. I thought it was also useful to just highlight, this is something that I think we know, but I think it's worth reminding ourselves. And this is something that a colleague from across the Pennines has commented on from Manchester University, who also have a Centre for Excellence in Teaching and Learning, also in inquiry-based learning, Bill Hutchings. He says, we should guard against a glib interpretation of active learning. And I think that is important. Active learning is not just about doing things. You know, and Diana has talked about that already this morning. It's about all sorts of things, but it's also about students actively thinking. A task that sends students off to the internet to do a bit of Googling, stitch the results together, is not a task that is encouraging active thinking and questioning. So, you know, in terms of thinking, in terms of learning design, we need to be activity focused, but we need to think beyond the concept of activity to a much more complex set of processes and relationships. And I think it's also worth remembering that activity can be quite teacher-focused rather than learner-focused or discovery-focused. So, you know, there's a complexity to this. So, and I think we kind of know that. That was our point of departure. So approaches to inquiry-based learning might include things like problem-based learning, using case scenarios for students to explore particular problems, questions, perhaps doing field work. Experiential learning, maybe using the experiential learning cycle, Kolb's experiential learning cycle as a design framework, small and large scale research projects. And it might be the full design principle for a module, or it might be just embedded into small scale activities embedded into more traditional curricula. Inquiry-based learning looks different in different disciplines because research practice is different in different disciplines. Scholarship is different in different disciplines, and therefore, you know, this pedagogy looks different. But perhaps there's a kind of broad process. This is a kind of generic process for expressing what inquiry-based learning might look like. Students and tutors establishing a question and problem, or students or tutors, students pursuing lines of inquiry, drawing on their existing knowledge, the students identifying new learning and information needs, seeking information, evidence, and so on, discussing, receiving feedback, analysing, communicating, working with staff as partners. So all the kind of things that Diana was talking about, but in a particular pedagogical context. You might be wondering about the photo. I don't know. We had a photo competition where we invited students to send us images of what inquiry-based learning meant to them. This was one of them. We liked it, but you can interpret it in all sorts of ways, looking at things from different angles, perhaps. Having fun, who knows? Okay. And the last thing really about inquiry-based learning before we look at LAMS, of course, in terms of thinking about designing for inquiry-based learning, I think the question, the task, is at the centre, the student's task in relation to outcomes, of course. And inquiry-based learning, in terms of activity sequencing, will often reverse the conventional norms. So the conventional norms might be, you know, information input, lecturing or whatever, and then students going away and doing something to apply that, roughly. In inquiry-based learning, that might be reversed. It might be that students are given a problem, and they have to think then about the kind of information that they will need, and then, you know, you might sort of input some material, some stuff, some content at a later stage. So activity sequencing is going to be perhaps a little bit different. And we hoped, and indeed have found in some cases that LAMS might help unpack some of those issues with colleagues. So we're interested, as a community of practice within the institution, to develop shared representations, cases, design sequences, and so on, and explore those. So our question is, does a tool such as LAMS offer added value to the process and impact of designing for inquiry-based learning? We're particularly interested in the arts and social sciences, but we have worked with colleagues in other areas too. How suitable is LAMS for open-ended as well as more structured forms of IBL? That has been quite a critical question for us. And how effective are LAMS sequences as shareable representations of practice for us in our context? And as I say, we're really still working in work in progress about any answers to these questions. Is there a fit between LAMS and the purposes and values of IBL? Does LAMS stimulate new and innovative inquiry-based designs for learning? What do our students experience? What are the issues and values around reuse? What are the support needs? Those are the kind of questions we've been looking at. And we've created 18 sequences so far in these kinds of areas. You can see most of them are in the arts and social sciences. What I'm not going to do is show you any of the sequences, because we don't have time, and I want to sort of bring out some more generic sort of issues, I think. But we can always perhaps talk about those later on if you're interested to actually hear about what the sequences have been. What I will say is that we found that our early innovators were almost all really quite cautious. The kinds of sequences that colleagues were willing to design were sort of little ones, you know, using a few tools, just kind of dipping their toes in the water. So we tend to have quite a lot of sequences where, you know, there's not a lot of different activity going on, or there's perhaps three or four of the different tools being used. And people have wanted to use it in quite small-scale ways to begin with, I think perhaps for entirely understandable reasons. I mentioned that we were interested in exploring. Our assumption is that the kind of values and attitudes and beliefs about pedagogy, about teaching and learning, that academic staff hold, will impact on the way they see the affordances of land. So we wanted to explore those assumptions with them before they used land, and then to go back to them later. So these are the kinds of issues around pedagogy that came out in the discussions with colleagues in the pre-interviews, and very very much kind of seemed to divide along these two in these two categories. So some colleagues were talking very much about this. You know, we asked them, what's in your mind when you're going about designing a learning activity? Right, you know, some people are talking about, yes, I'm interested in taking students through a linear process of some kind. I'm interested in tight scaffolding. Fragmentation sounds potentially negative. It's not meant to be. It's a neutral term. You know, might want to sort of break things up into little pieces for various reasons. Might be quite keen to make sure that there's closure running through a learning design at various stages, and to have quite a lot of control on that from the tutor's end. Sequential, teacher control. Sometimes people use the term instructivist. Sometimes they didn't, to describe what they were doing, actually. And then there were other colleagues who were really right at the other, saw themselves sort of at this other end of the spectrum, talked much more about, I want to create environments which are very open, interested in opportunities for digression, for students to kind of go off in all sorts of different directions, loose structures, kind of holistic views of the learning process, open-endedness, iteration, student control, and sometimes they talked about constructivism in that context. And I guess what you can see is that inquiry-based learning would be probably more likely, you know, we would associate that with the right-hand column of values, at least at the higher levels. What we found was that in general, colleagues seem to associate, when they first see LAMS, they associate it more readily with the left-hand column. That's quite interesting. Not all of them, not uniquely, but interesting. So this is some quotations that people came up with. I think with students, this is before they'd used it, remember. I think with students who may not be familiar with IBL, LAMS offers, in its structured way, a very good way of scaffolding them. I think it does help, if you like, more novice learners. You can use the discussion boards and forums and set specific tasks. No, it isn't entirely open-ended inquiry, you know, but she can see some value in that and took it forward in that way. Then somebody else says, I think IBL is getting people to learn through doing research. I'm not sure that LAMS is that suited. LAMS itself is quite kind of mechanical, kind of instructivist model of teaching built into it. That was the initial reaction. Now, of course, what's going on here is an interaction between the interpretive framework that the teacher brings and the technology. It's neither one nor the other that's creating that perception, I think. It's the interaction. What he says is, you were told what to do and answer questions. Well, this doesn't have to be the case, but that's how he saw it. It's all programmed in. While IBL is a more open process, and so on and so on. And then somebody else says, now this was somebody who was a scientist, so a bit different view of pedagogy perhaps. You have to encourage the students to do things in a particular order. That's what he was interested in. And to understand something properly before they move on to the next step. LAMS is quite good at doing that, I think. And that's what he wanted to use it for. So this very, again, you can see the differences in pedagogical values there. We also asked people, you know, about how you go about designing for learning. And this is very tentative, as I say. It's just starting to come out of the data. But there seem to be these kind of four categories of general approach. And this is at quite a high level of approach. According to whether colleagues were taking a content-oriented or process-oriented approach to designing for learning, and according to whether they were taking a kind of prescribed, already established approach, or were kind of allowing something to emerge and evolve out of their own thinking. So let me see if I can explain this in a little bit more detail, just to give you a sense of this. Down in the bottom left-hand corner, we've got the kind of prescribed and content-oriented. So this would be what I would call content-oriented practice based on the accepted logic of the discipline's knowledge or procedural structures. So that I'll give you a quote which perhaps will exemplify this better than an explanation can. This was the colleague who said, right, because you need to know X. Oh, he was asked the question, so how do you go about designing for learning? Okay. Well, because you need to know, and he was a bit baffled by the question, because you need to know X before you can do Y, well, in fact, planning the lecture content, he says, that wasn't what we asked about, but content, planning the lecture content is pretty much, actually there's no planning to do. It's really how much time you give to topics, and the topics naturally build one on top of the other. And I think that for him, it was kind of a common sense thing, that actually because of his understanding of how his discipline works, the nature of the discipline and the way the knowledge structure of that discipline, you know, the way it is, therefore the learning design would follow from that, which I found quite interesting. Anyway, a different kind of content orientation, I think, but more emergent, was another colleague who, well, several colleagues actually, but this was a particular quotation here, based on more personal representations of the discipline's knowledge structures, so not sort of seen as a given, but the lecturer's own kind of organisation of the content. So, quote here it is, well, I think I make things up as I go along, really. So, for example, for this one, this particular design he's talking about, I did have an original plan in Word, but I think I basically scrapped that at the beginning, and I basically built it around the podcast recording, the one that I just created. So he's, again, focusing on content, but his design is kind of emergent in relation to, you know, the meaning that he's making out of that, the sense that he sees that the relationship between that content and the subject. Okay. From an IBL point of view, we might say we'd be particularly interested in fostering a more process-oriented view of learning design, I think. I think we'd take a position on that, pedagogically. And we've seen two kind of processes coming out of that. On the left-hand top side, process-oriented practice based on existing process frameworks where people might be taking off the shelf, as it were, experiential learning cycles or problem-based learning cycles or perhaps Diana's conversational framework, existing frameworks which provide models of practice, if you like. And we didn't have anybody doing that in our sample, actually. Mm-hmm. Or at least they didn't say they were, which is interesting. And then on the other side, kind of more process-oriented practice based on personal process goals and frameworks. So, for example, somebody says here, I used to start with what content I want to put in. Now I start with what do I want students to get out of it. And I don't mean in terms of learning outcomes. I mean in a bigger, holistic experience. So not just what do you want them to be able to do at the end of the course, but what experience do you want them to have of learning. So very, very process-focused, very kind of holistic view. I've kind of gone into that in a bit of detail because that's interesting to us, and I think that's something we want to pursue. I think it may help us to think about how we work with colleagues, because it gives us a way of talking about the process of learning design within our context. I'll just talk a little bit now about some feedback that we got. High level of design usability. People really, 5 minutes, yep. People really like the quick and easiness of using LAMS. Now this quote, well, it invited you to think you can create, and then the truth is that it's very easy to make boring e-learning. And this, I should put a little context around that, which is that this is a wry, self-critical comment on the part of a colleague who had shown his learning design, done a learning design, shown it to a colleague, and this other colleague had said, well, I think that's a bit boring, actually, and maybe you could do it differently. Of course, that's a nice example of sharing in action and getting feedback in action. But what, and also the point about this is he said, I think there is room for a tool to just plan classroom sessions. I don't think LAMS is it. Now, you know, we could debate that, and of course LAMS 2 is offering different kinds of features and functionality, but I think his point was he was moving towards a sense of, I think what I need is a pedagogic planner, I think he was kind of saying. You know, so that's interesting too. In terms of design affordances, some colleagues very much seeing LAMS as a kind of workbook, the flowchart model, a tool for reinforcing linear procedures. This could be positive or negative, of course, depending on perspective. The open classroom space, colleagues were much less likely to see it in that way, and more likely in our Web CT context, at the institution to say, well, but WebCT is more open, isn't it? Yeah, WebCT is more open, but actually that's not the way people use it. You know, so interesting. Different aspects of LAMS valued in different disciplines. Because of time, I'm going to flit through right to allow Ian to say something. I've focused really on the teachers. Just to say sharing and reuse. Colleagues who are here, I think, have said the rhetoric of reuse may connect more with teachers' espoused intentions for action than the reality of sharing and reuse, and that's certainly something that's reflected in our own experience so far. This one, pedagogical support, just the third bullet point. When we've been working with colleagues using LAMS, my colleague Sabina Little, who's done the pedagogic support, has said she felt that she's needed to encourage thinking away from the tool. Well, there's some thinking, of course, that is really valuable in terms of the sequencing issues and so on, but actually in terms of seeing beyond, kind of seeing beyond the linear sequence to the broader picture, then she's had to encourage that kind of moving back from the tool. So there's a kind of interaction back and forth between the tool, the pedagogy, and the needs. You know, we need a conversational framework within which to engage colleagues, I think, around those issues. Ian, you've got
30 seconds
or something hidden.
Which is great, because I've been really bad throat since the Great Sheffield flooded last week. But basically, I've been working at the university supporting labs in a university which has institutional-wide BLE, WebCT. So the challenge in itself has been getting people to look at using labs when we've been telling them for the last 5 years to use WebCT. And maybe we've been a little bit too good in some cases to use WebCT. Some people look at labs and say, well, I can do a very similar thing with WebCT. But just how much effort would it have been to program something with selective release and moving something else? When we've actually got people to sit down and work with LAMS, they're creating the sort of things like they couldn't even think of doing in WebCT. In fact, back at what Phil said, our WebCT, maybe 90-95% of the modules within WebCT are just content. They're just lecturers put their notes online and they think they've kind of achieved their e-learning and they walk off and leave it. So I guess, really, our next focus is looking at what we do with LAMS and looking at how we integrate that within WebCT. So that's what I wanted to talk to James about next. Looking at Mowbray WebCT holding the forums and the content and LAMS holding the design activities. I'll leave it at that. So you've got 30 seconds for questions.
Yes, let's finish there, I think. Well, I'll just close perhaps, but returning to these questions, but I think actually we don't have answers to them. Is there a fit between LAMS and the purpose and values of IBL in different contexts? I think the answer to that is probably yes, but not automatically. That's the answer. That's the kind of two-word answer to that. Does LAMS stimulate new and innovative inquiry-based design for learning? Yes, but not automatically. You know, there's some kind of other process of support and pedagogical inquiry, really, that needs to be connected with sort of adoption. Experience of use, students have been quite positive, and particularly students in disciplines where they've been following linear procedures and so on. Less so perhaps in the arts and social sciences, although they've very much valued the collaborative and the personal diary type aspects, the reflective aspects. And I've talked a little bit about support needs, but I think it's time to finish there. That's it. We would be very, very much welcoming your comments, questions and observations. Perhaps we should take them off over coffee. Yeah.
Coffee now, which is down the other end, and we'll start again in half an hour's time across the stage.